Good evening, everybody. Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and this is The Hidden Work.
Do you know where your angel is?
Really? So we are on Chapter 14 of The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold, and we continue to work our way through this remarkable volume. And where we have come, it's a long journey. The book itself is a unveiling, in my opinion, of prayer absolute. And it is prayer absolute is specified and it's laid out in chapter 11, but leading up to it is quite a course, and then unfolding dramatically in chapter 12. And suddenly we find ourselves in chapter 14. And how did we get here? What's the title of chapter 14 again?
The Angelic Choirs.
Angelic Choirs.
David, tonight Tonight is 1 year and 1 day since we started this book.
Oh, what a wonderful anniversary.
I thought it was a couple of months.
We started on 9/24/12.
I thought we'd get through it in about 12, 13 weeks. Something slowed me up, Harry. But here we are. So chapter 14, it introduces us to a staggering concept. The whole of the opus of the work that E.J. Gold is presenting unfolds through a number of volumes. And there's a lot of basic work in books like The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus, Practical Work on Self, Life in the Labyrinth. And we find ourselves now in that course, in that arc of growth in a certain way, that suddenly we're in a growth technique or a technology called angelic choirs. But if you've been following along with this plot line as the mystery unfolds itself over the last 1 year and 1 day, you'll notice that, in fact, it makes sense to be here now, because the assumptions in Chapter 14 are that the whole concept of how do you awaken the machine to pacify the results of our historical personality, as Silverdale calls it, which is a wonderful term, the mechanicality, since it's already pacified. It says, okay, if your protocol is such that you know how to hang out in this space, let's say that you've done enough that you can hang out in the invocational space. Okay, you know how to behave in a certain way that's such that you don't harm the space. Now that you're there, welcome, and let's do some work while we're there. And that's what chapter 14 starts to unfold. So it's a dramatic focus on the essential self, and the essential self as a tool for bardo traveling. And when we enter into that voyage, we also encounter other beings along the way, which is our fellow travelers, like we have here, but also other entities, other beings that may be there. The part of the problem is that we have to anthropomorphize our conceptions of what this is. We want God to be basically just a better father, and we want the divine goddess to be just kind of like our mom, but better. Actually, like our grandmother, because we can never agree that our mother was.
But sexy.
But sexy. But, basically, just like us, but better, like in My Fair Lady. If they could just be like me. But, in fact, It's fundamentally different. It's something fundamentally different because we are becoming fundamentally different. And as we look at chapter 2 of Practical Work on Self, and I don't see a copy at the moment, or chapter 15, it talks about gradations of being, so that we're laying a framework for this. The being is gradually becoming the root of our existence, not something that we kind of think and hear about. It starts to become who we are. And so that's part of what we're talking about here, is forming a different platform. And once that platform begins to form, what are you going to do with it? Well, immediately, as with all of the work that E.J. Gold presents, it's, let's take it to another level. You know, you're in the room now. Oh, okay. Come on stage and play an instrument. But I don't play. That's okay. And that's part of how the training works. So this particular type of training is angelic training. So let's put in a little bit of context. And Tamara, why don't you read the header to the chapter then?
Angel training is a method of drawing down the higher mental, emotional, and moving postures from one of the angelic beings who is already in the work, so that by observation we may practice these work methods and form an angelic work identity with one of them.
Okay, does that make sense to you based on the angel work we've been doing the last few weeks?
Yes.
It starts to take on meaning, doesn't it? It has a little bit of meat to it. Because what we're trying to do is, in a sense, we're trying to put ourselves in the way of something. We're not trying to take our conception and fit it into something. So each I don't know who's online and listening and things, but several people have selected a particular hall of which they're interested in. And it just flowed from them. Now as they dig into it, it's becoming a very personal work. And gradually as I go to some of the groups and work with them, you can just see that there's a little spark starts. And suddenly something is being unveiled there.
I think too, for me, it's part of the work is to work with others on a project, is creating even more spark and energy.
And what happens there is that you're each person selected, and then they were introduced to their other choir members. So in a certain way, we're working with individuals who are like-minded. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Silverdale, are you there tonight?
Yes, I am, David, listening very carefully.
Good. And Simon, I think, is online. We'll talk briefly after about Jim, okay? And maybe I want to update you on what's going on with that.
Oh, great.
Okay. Now, so given the context of the work that individuals are doing, there are 5 angelic choirs that are active right now, and there are 3 or 4 people in each choir. And each group has met a few times now, a few times in bringing forth their focus of attention, and I like to say also intention. There's an intention there. If you're kind of like, I just look at it like, you pass by the machine and you allow the essential self to come forward and to exhibit, and then you point it somewhere. You know, you're like pointing it. And you're saying, I don't know what it is, but I'm pointing it towards Raphael. Like, I don't know if Mark Roach is on, but this guy, amazing. He goes out and he goes, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't even know how to think about it, but I'm here in the City of Angels. He walks out in the street and like a ball bat gets hit upside the head with something that he identified as Raphael. you know, but we put ourselves in a position in a certain way to be in the channel that avails ourselves of specifically what was read in the header again. Read the header again with that in mind. Angel?
Angel training is the method of drawing down the higher mental, emotional, and moving postures from one of the angelic beings who is already in the work, so that by observation, we may practice these work methods and form an angelic work identity with one of them.
Okay. So given that context, we're going to launch into the last couple of pages of the chapter. Okay? And it's quite dramatic, in my opinion. But in doing the work that I've seen in the last few weeks, it appears that it might be possible. I'm on page 153. I'm going to skip the discussion of Maimonides and the Shekinah, though it's good and important to read that. And I'm going to go down to almost to the last full paragraph of that page 153. And this is what I want to emphasize and pose it as an interesting question and something that, and I'll bring up something that was brought up to me recently. In a church, there should be 7 definite choirs. And properly speaking, those responsible for the maintenance of the church should teach the congregation the process of initiatism. In the past, a member of the congregation would start out in the seventh, which is the lowest angelic level, only one dimension higher than our own, and by learning through conscious imitation the work of the seventh level, work his way one level at a time toward the altar, which represents the throne of the absolute in the highest dimension, finally assuming the deaconship where he would be a helper on the altar. The process of initiatism is discouraged in churches today, as opposed to ancient times, mostly because of the peculiar object, and he talks about then that what the churches are after, of course, is coin of the realm. But would you agree that this level of initiatism is discouraged in churches today? Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a Catholic. I went to Catholic Church. I was impressed with a lot about the Catholic Church. I was, you know, particularly when I was very, very young, the spirit of the devotion, particularly when I wasn't in the Mass, but I could feel the sense of true devotion that was there in the cathedral-like setting of these large Catholic churches, and also the Eastern Orthodox Church, which was filled with symbolism, you know, quite rich in that way. And I think, Harry, you've had some experience with Eastern Orthodox.
Yes, some did.
Okay, hold on. Lost Horizon, Dan is saying that he hasn't been in churches hardly at all. But he went with some friends to visit in a Catholic monastery. The atmosphere of devotion was
palpable.
You could feel it when he walked in.
So those are moments that we recall. That's the effect of the initiatism and the initiation of the choirs working in that particular monastic environment. That it's tangible to those who are able to listen and hear and sense their way through it. I also have had an exact experience like that. So then jumping ahead a couple of paragraphs, upon entering the church, we would see seven choirs of participants in the congregational section, and the service would consist entirely of vocal music and the corresponding movements which would produce the mood of the higher dimensions, which are the object of the service. There would be no speaking, no moral lectures, no harangue, or grief-struck, moaning preacher weeping hysterically as he recounts some idiotic imaginary feature of one or another of the prophet's lives. We would hear none of the cynical sentimentality so common to churches today, in which older women on pensions are exhorted to bring shopping bags full of money right up onto the podium and then go home and sit quietly watching television, eating dog food until their time comes around. We would also notice the strange lack of gold and jewel-drenched preachers in Calvin Klein undershorts. Now, each of the choirs, so listen carefully, choir members, each of the choirs taking its turn to provide relief for the others, would share the obligation of upholding the throne by singing accolades and sacred canticles and performing the movements which represent the mathematical reality of creation, which at the same time, while at the same time concentrating the fullest possible force of attention and support of the throne, which is the exalted dimension of the solar absolute itself. Now, each of the choirs, represented by members of the congregation, correspond to one of the distending cosmoses, which fall into smaller and smaller fragmentations as they descend into lesser and lesser octaves from the first great octave, so that, for instance, the highest choir would be all quarters common cosmic maintainers, and so forth down the scale. The lowest choir would represent that dimension immediately accessible to those forms of life in the animal and mineral kingdom among which human beings of the planet Earth happen to have the misfortune to belong. Members of the congregation, each of the choirs, would represent those more exalted beings existing in various higher dimensions. In ascending order would be the corresponding dimensional worlds of powers, virtues, dominions, cherubim, and finally the awesome and terrifying seraphim. On the altar is the throne. To our vision, the throne seems to sit empty because the absolute is the unseen eye of the cosmos, and we can see only the phenomenal world, the body of the absolute. This reminds me of in Paradiso, when Dante, led by Beatrice, finally arrives in the highest chambers. He's in heaven, in the heavenly realms, and at the very beginnings of the heavenly realms, he's able to see certain manifestations. But as he goes higher and higher, at the very end, all that he has shown is a single perfect rose. There's nothing else. Because he wouldn't be capable of seeing. Because if you are capable of seeing that which sits on that throne, then you are something that is no more. And as we see throughout the work of these teachers and the work of E.J. Gold in this particular manner, we see that that's not what he chose. That's not what the workers choose. They choose, yeah, maybe I am going to get divinely inspired and touched, but then I'm going to come back and do something because of what I hear people say in some of these invocations sometimes, for the benefit of all beings everywhere, right? Yeah. So the point of it is that you when you get to that highest throne, and when you look at this, and you go, oh, yeah, well, gosh, you know, if this chamber is higher than that chamber, maybe I'd rather be in that little higher chamber, because then, you know, I kind of probably belong there. No. I'm kind of cool, right? It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with the ego. It has nothing to do with higher, lower, better. It has to do with the functionality of posts. Simple as that. You are in a post. And without all the posts operating appropriately, nothing operates. Okay? Does that make sense? So it's not, this is an important thing that each choir in turn takes its post in supporting the throne. Each one will do it in its own manner. How are we doing on the comments?
No comments, really.
Pardon?
No comments, really.
Mark Gross is there. Thank you, Susan. In descending order, the choirs fall from the throne. There will be fewer and fewer participant members of the congregation in each of the ascending choirs, just as would occur in any situation, which is to say, the more rarefied the atmosphere, the fewer to take the obligation and responsibilities for the more exalted positions. The main body of the congregation would represent the mineral body and animal kingdom exactly as it does in ordinary mainstream of the human life. Now, of course, the temple ritual itself represents something genuine in the non-phenomenal world, and one is expected to transcend one's personal identity during the service in order to intentionally identify with more exalted being in the choir within which one has initiate status. Does this not correspond to what we're talking about, like why we selected a particular hall? Each person did. Each person was invited by themselves or selected by or invited, who knows how that goes, but we know it worked, that each person intentionally identify with the more exalted being in the choir within one which has initiate status. The initiations for each choir consist of moving, emotional, and mental instructions for identification with an angel of that choir, which would be completely secret to those who are not initiated into that choir. Otherwise, one might involuntarily wander into identification with a choir higher than that into which one has taken initiation. Passing from one choir to another is always by the process of study, assumption of greater obligation, and when understanding dawns upon one, the transcending stage of self-initiation. The technique for passing from one choir to the next is never the same, and the methods change as one moves inward to more and more exalted dimensions. Angelic beings are very much like ourselves, except in their arising. They were created at the highest stage of evolution, yet they cannot evolve. In a sense, they were made to occupy the posts that they now occupy, and they have no other interest beyond the work as it relates to the maintenance of the throne as required by their particular post. So, you know, someone's the doorkeeper, someone's the fire tender, someone keeps the candles going. They're all the same, of same importance, because if anyone stops, then it all stops. It all starts to break down. So each element is needed with a high degree of competency. They are no more or less intelligent than human beings. They have squabbles among themselves, although not as human beings would, nor are these the same trifles over which human beings struggle with one another. Someday I hope to build a cathedral. on a small scale. An exact representation of the throne, the choirs, and the assembly chambers corresponding to that of each of the choirs of angels. Should someone happen along who could finance a small cathedral to be built in exact conformity to the choirs and the throne, should all the factors of the building and decor be exactly corresponding to the higher. In addition, should every individual participating in sacred prayer identify exactly with each of the beings in the higher dimensions of the work, then the congregation ought to pass from this world into the higher dimensions, leaving no trace of themselves. In this world, although the cathedral itself would remain. This has been attempted in the past, particularly by Gomidas, when he sent his pupils to Russia, France, Germany, and the United States during his exile in Paris in the 1920s and 30s. He hoped to produce a real church, but was never able because of the lack of interest on part of those who have in the course of their lives accumulated more money than they actually need for even the most comfortable lifestyle to actually accomplish the same. Also, Western voices were not able to produce the sounds required in his mass texts, nor was he able to convince anyway but a few pupils of the necessity for movements in the religious service, although he had little trouble getting them to his dinner table. So, what the author is implying here is that this is a real function. We're doing beginner's work in this regard. We're doing the very beginning work. All we're doing really is turning our attention to it, and we're amassing enough momentum in a sense such that maybe in time, you know, we'll garner enough momentum such that we can decide what our next step should be.
So there's a comment.
Okay.
From Mark Roach. He says, as a mega famous rock and roll star said once in an interview about a huge concert tour that he was on, the water boy was as important as anyone else on the tour.
So there's no question that there's a truth to that. And our job is to really find out what is our post. Different people will have different posts, but they're all critical to the formation of the initiation and for the maintenance of it. And some people will be highly skilled in particular elements that they're not skilled in other elements. But it's, as you said earlier, it's the group coming together that brings different elements. You know, in your particular group, you have really three very different types. Very different. And yet, they come together with a particular interest, a gravitas toward your task.
Are any of the choirs working with you? That seems to be a key element.
You know, no. I mean, I don't, none that I'm aware of. But I constantly think about that is, you know, should we introduce the movements? Now, here's the topic that came up. I was challenged the other day. Somebody connected with one of the halls gets a hold of me and they say, you know what? This is ridiculous. You know, there's no way you should do this for a month or so. You should do this for a year. And that night, I dug out some of my dusty books, Mystical Kabbalah by Dion Fortune, and then Gareth Knight's work on the correspondence between the tarot and the and the Tree of Life. And there's, for instance, there's a huge discussion of the various archangels and how they relate to the particular Sephiroth. What is the Sephiroth, by the way? And why are there only seven celestial halls? There are 10 Sephiroth. Dan?
What is the Sephiroth?
In the Tree of Life. Harry, are you on?
I am, David.
Could you answer that question for Susan, please?
And for the edification of us all?
David, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, there's in Hebrew mysticism is the Kabbalists have constructed something called the Tree of Life. And the Tree of Life has 10 posts in it. Each one is called the Sephiroth. The very highest one is called Kether. That is the chamber of I am that I am. That's the Godhead, the Absolute. Chokmah and Bina follow that. And then there are seven others below that that are, each one has a different signature to existence. But at the very, very, very lowest one is the earth. Okay, so here's the, yeah, Malkuth.
So David, yeah. It's very interesting. Pathworld says, to your question, because the top three ones are not in this world.
That's right. The answer to the question is that the top three are not in the world. They're not
part of...
They're
on the other side of the abyss, David.
That's exactly right. And so, therefore, we can't operate in any way, shape, or form from those three posts. Because if you go into those three posts, then you are not. And literally, your existence becomes undesignated, and you're part of the great ocean of the Absolute. And people that get closer, they move further and further up the path, they realize that they want to come back. They're compelled to come back and work, help in any way they can. So each one of the 10, the seven lower Sephiroth, is identified with an archangel. Michael is Hod.
Is it like a hall?
Pardon?
Is it similar to a hall? I mean,
what is a hall? Hall is a place, or it's really a post. It's a functionality.
So similar to what we're studying.
Absolutely, bang on, similar. So
David Simon has an interesting comment that relates here.
Please.
There are 10 states of consciousness from the Absolute descending to what we know as our world. And that summarizes it pretty well, in my opinion.
So each of those posts of, I'm going to probably get it wrong, so help me, guys. Each of those 10 orbs, and I brought a picture of it once. I'll bring it again next week. But each of those 10 orbs represent those posts. Like the center one is called Tiphereth. That is the home of the Christ consciousness is there. And so each one is a realm, in a sense, a realm in the movement of consciousness. Well, each one then is ruled by an angel that can do the post called forth in that realm. So when I was listening to this comment from this individual saying, you know, you're just short-changing this thing, you should do this for a year or two. Then an interesting thing occurs because each of the Sephiroth is connected to others by a path. And each path, there, if I'm correct, there are 21 paths. I think, and I'm getting a yes from the expert.
22, David.
22?
Yes. Each corresponding to the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet.
Oh, they're numbered.
Or the major arcana of the tarot.
Because in chapter 15 of the practical work on self, the doorway exercise talks about 21 gradations of consciousness. Yeah. But anyway, so there, each path has a different signature. Like the path between Hod and Netzach, which is Haniel, has a character to it. Well, if we start delving into that, we're going to see more and more about the realm that our particular angel lives in and how it connects with the other ones, right? So this is the introductory course. That's all. And it's a worthy study. It's a worthy study to stick with it and to work with it for a while and to see what comes out. And it's just so interesting to do it and to sit with it in these manners, because some people, as they sit in that chamber with their particular angel, suddenly they get things. Something comes to them that's a particular signature.
David, there's some good comments here that are relevant, I think.
Would you be able to, would you guys like to read those then?
They're very short. Lost Horizon says that the Fool card is zero, and Lost Horizon, it said that there are 22 paths and 22 tarot cards, but one of them is zero. And Lost points out that the Fool card is zero. So there are still 21 gradations in 22 different paths that connect the 10 Sephiroth.
Okay. Thank you. So, any other thoughts, or how's your work coming in your choirs? Is there something you'd like to ask, share about, discuss, expand on, expose? Transpose. This part of it is actually, and this is tough work, there's no question about it, and it's exposing us to the concept of the post in the work. And we always, you know, we know that we're newbies, we're beginners, but every once in a while we have a little blip and we realize, oh, maybe that's my post. Maybe that's something that I'm to do. And
I think that by being able to accept a post, even if it's a small post,
yes,
and do it without judgment, then you can really accept it.
Absolutely. It's huge. I mean, I think doing something with excellence at that level, no matter what level it is a thing of beauty. It's true beauty. It just always catches my eye.
Sometimes you'll see like a janitor that's from another country, and you can see how much pride he takes in his floor, and he like takes it seriously.
Yeah.
Something that most Americans wouldn't do.
And you can sense it when you come to somebody who takes the full expression to do it. They are willing to take the full expression. And it's quite a beautiful thing. It reminds me of and I've said this quote a number of times, and it'll bore many of you, but I always love it. And it's from William Blake, and he says, if a fool would but persist in his foolishness, he would become wise. And you can see this in every trade that there is. There's these individuals that just, they love the excellence of what they're doing, whether it's being a car mechanic or a stonemason, a painter, a house painter, but they do it with a certain excellence. And it's a job well done. So part of this work, angelic work, is to see, help us discover on an individual basis, what is our post? What should my post be? Am I able to begin to discover that? Even stained glass artists might fall into that category.
One thing I've been noticing is the importance of sound. EJ has recently been talking quite a bit about music is love and tune. And here tonight we were hearing about sound and movement as forming the basis of the practice of the choirs. At breakfast last weekend, he mentioned that sometimes he is invited to serve as a choir master for some of the lower choirs, which was not elaborated on, but I thought that was an interesting share with the group, that it does become possible to serve the choir even in physical form.
A good example of of doing a post well are the backup singers.
Yes.
For a band or something.
Yes.
You know, you see Bono. Mm-hmm. He's a nice singer. I like his voice. He's a good singer. But he always has two or three of these backup singers, and they're just delightful. I mean, they're just perfect, you know. They just, what they do, two or three, and they just sing in a certain way, and it seems essential to the particular musical presentation that he's doing. And they're just singing every other word or bebopping along, but they're very secondary. They're not in front. The boy is a critical. Just a wonderful post to have. That's an example of being part of a choir.
Not a bad has a question.
Yes.
He says, what is understood as a post? An activity, a job, a mood, or a behavior?
I would say it's more of a job. But the function, the concept of job would take on just doing a function in a space. For instance, let's say there was a space and there was two or three people that were participating in a particular element of the invocation, but that the element also had there were like four or five other people there. And one person, let's say, was literally the doorkeeper. That the door was, people couldn't come into the space during that period of time. So if somebody came in, that person would have to basically turn them away with a particular finesse, right? It couldn't be an argument because you would impinge on the space. You'd have to just say, the space is closed for the moment, but in such a way that the person acknowledges it and doesn't feel excluded. And maybe that particular space required candlelight. And even though somebody, they weren't part of, maybe it's a reading that's going on or something, they weren't part of that reading or whatever, but they had to maintain the candles. And if they'd have to know how to light a candle without disrupting the space, or how about everyone say, wait, I'm going to go light the candle. They'd have to do it invisibly. And so all that occurs is that the candlelight stays proper. Okay? And let's say there was incense in the space. Let's say it required a particular kind of burning incense. So someone would have to keep that fire going constantly. But they would do it in such a way that it was unnoticed, but always present. Those would be all examples of a job. Let's say there was a reading going on. Say it was a reading of a particular document that needed to be readed and read in that particular space in that particular manner. And there were, let's say, three readers. Well, the readers would have to be highly attuned to each other, right? There wasn't a reader, there were three readers. The job isn't, oh, yeah, Joan gave a great performance that day. Jack was really nice. No, it was read appropriately. So each of those would be a post. And all I'm saying is that I'm distinguishing it between a material job as such, but it's similar to a job. It's fulfilling a function that is required in a particular space of invocation. Does that help a little bit?
Well, in Pian, let's see. Pian just says a job, a station, a position. Lost Horizon here, and Simon says totally it helps. Lost Horizon says the task requires or causes the other thing.
The task requires the other thing or causes the other thing?
Right.
Causes the other, what's the other thing?
I'm not sure.
Hopefully he'll answer that question.
Yeah,
it's an interesting comment.
Help me, Pianjo.
That's a very interesting statement, that the task requires or causes the other things. I guess everything about that position or post.
Yeah.
It requires everything else that we do in response to that need.
Maybe a different way of putting it is the invocation requires that those posts be there. Is that right? In other words, the invocation, let's say the invocation is a movement, a dance movement series. That's with three people are the dancers, but the space has to be kept appropriate for those individuals. So if the invocation is to do that kind of work, then all the posts that allow that to occur arise out of the invocation.
Pathworld says that an example, we can't say, get the hell out of here. We have to maintain the mood of the space and remain invisible.
That's exactly right, Pathro. But go ahead. Yes. Yeah. So what he's, and Lost Horizon is Dan, and he's here with us, and so he's expounding on his comment. And what he's saying is that in a particular invocation, if there's a particular post, you adapt yourself to the post. You take the shape of that post, right? In other words, you surrender to doing that post. Absolutely.
That's
part of the challenge. Here's another example. Nobody here probably remembers Adelheid. Anna, were you Adelheid? Yeah, I sure remember, sir. This was years and years ago. And we were having dinner or lunch or something, and there was somebody here visiting, and EJ was doing a particular invocation for this young man to want him to feel the higher, want him to feel this. So he went around the room and he asked everybody what they did. And this one did classical guitar, and this one was a writer, and this one was a poet, and this one was a financial consultant, you know, international taxes. This one did this, this one did this. And the last person was Adelheid, and he comes to Adelheid, and she said, I don't do anything, any of those things, I just sweep the floor. And EJ said, right, nun's work. So if the job is to do nun's work, then that's the job. She happened to be an expert at hanging out in the hospice space. She could be with somebody with, she didn't infect the space at all. She could just support the transit person really well. So, yeah, you adapt to the post, but the first part of it is, do you have the intuition to begin sensing what post is needed in a particular environment? Somebody said to me a little while ago, can you come and do this particular thing in the morning because no one's doing it? Well, I can do it. So in a certain way, I'm compelled to, right?
Yes.
And so the answer is yes, but now we're really talking about the concept of developing our discernment. We have definitely no longer in Kansas, baby. We are in another world, and what I'm saying in this, and the offer here in these chapters by E.J. Gold in this Hidden Work book is, stand in that position. What does he say there in the chapter? He says, we expect that you're already here and you're not manifesting, right? Join the big boys. We expect that you're already there. Now what? The now what part is, turn your intention toward the angel and archangel that you have selected and allow yourself to be in that space for a while and see what comes forth. That's it. It's a lot, but... So it's probable that next week we'll probably have our first presentation from one of the angelic choirs to our group as a whole. So it'll be a very different type of class. And there are a lot of parts to it that we're not quite sure how we're going to work out, but we're going to figure it out between now and then. But it'll be a different form of class, and you're going to get to see something, what it looks like, different posts being taken on by the members of this particular choir that's going to come forth next week. So that puts it at October 2nd, I think. We're already in October. Anything else? Mark has a question.
Yes, he does.
Go ahead.
Any thought with respect to how the Angels Healing Journey video might be used as an adjunct to all of this?
Angels Healing Journey video. Okay. I don't have a memory of that at the moment.
There was several that were released at the same time.
Hmm. I don't know. If you have those, Mark, why don't you do some groundwork and see what happens? Maybe you can help us see that material. The point is that as we do this work more and more, we discover more bits of data that might help us. That's why this comment, do this for a year, was potent, because there's a lot there to uncover. There's the infinite number of these angel websites out there. Some of them are pretty good. I don't know the answer, Mark.
Well, I think, there certainly is a lot that can be uncovered. Spending
yes.
more time with the angel eye. I mean, it feels to me like this angel is now connected to me forever.
See?
There's something about it that enough of a connection was built.
Is Vadir on? Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, Susan, I would love to work on the angel Haniel with you for the next year.
Okay.
Well,
I can feel that somehow my post is similar in that it's somewhere in there of a similar vibration.
That's what's happening with some individuals is there's a door that's kind of opening up, a little inner door that's suddenly very curious about that next position.
Well, it just came to me during this class that, like, our particular angel's main function is to bring people to their true selves. And then I realized how by myself, like having cancer, there's somehow a little part that gets people to wake up to their true self for a second. And so it's like my post is to wake people up for a second, just like the angel. So I don't know, that just kind of hit me tonight.
Sounds good to me.
Sure does.
One of the things in relationship to that is that there have been several other people, Susan, in the community who have been going through some life-threatening situations. And what has suddenly happened is there is a healing area that's been developed, two different healing areas that have been developed in the virtual ashram, and people are participating and forming a healing circle or choir. And this is a tremendous gift that these individuals who are facing these difficult situations have brought to the community, and the community in turn is responding. So there's this mutual initiation happening. So I understand very much what you're saying. That
well, yeah, I mean, I can see it on people's faces. They have to, even for a second, drop all the ordinary things, because all of a sudden, somehow, their little world didn't seem as important.
Yes, it was very powerful sitting next to you in the healing circle the other day and being in that space, you know, with others. So I'm hoping that in some form the angel work will continue.
Your posting, Susan, was excellent.
Well,
I hope people got a chance to read her post on chapter 14 of Wings of Chaos under the Hidden Work.
Worth reading, very much so.
Won't take you but a few minutes. So thank you for that, Susan, and thank you for those last comments. And we'll look forward. We're a little bit over time, but we'll look forward to seeing everybody next Wednesday when we'll try yet even a different experiment. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks, David. Good night.
Good night. Good night.